Part of what was so strange about watching Cho speak from the dead was how not strange it was. From his clothes right down to the poses he struck, we'd seen it all before. In Taxi Driver, The Matrix, Quentin Tarantino films, or the Korean splatter flicks that inspired them. Cho wasn't just playing to the camera. He was recycling performances taken by other cameras. But to say he was playing a role is not to say he wasn't also suffering, just as his fellow students in the days after experienced real pain, even as they dutifully played the roles they saw played in school shootings past. Media theorist Thomas D. Zengotita has written extensively about this phenomenon of mediated self-consciousness. He says that the complaints heard from the students at Virginia Tech that the media were paying too much attention to Cho and not enough to them revealed a certain sense of entitlement nurtured by our participatory media culture.
So when they say this, they're really giving sort of production advice. They're saying, this should be our story. This should be the script. Why are you guys collaborating with his script?
And I don't want to diminish the horrific experience that those people went through, but it did seem at times as if they were reading lines from a script, almost as if they'd been through all this before. And we have a couple of examples of that.
This is something that no one will ever get over. I mean, the people who died, yes, they've finished their pain, but the pain for everybody else go on forever.
That's just insane. That's such a big number. Like we were already saying, this is just like a college combine. It's just really sad.
Yeah, those two particular individuals. There's no question in my mind, just listening to their voices, that they understand they're in a drama, as well as something real. It's a fusion of reality and representation. I call it the story event. The story shapes the event. The event shapes the story. It unfolds in real time, just the way the kids who were trapped in their various classes were reporting on their cell phones simultaneously as the events unfold and hearing themselves on their own laptops reporting through MSNBC on themselves.
And we might think that it was a function of 24-hour cable news, but you maintain that it's far older than that.
I think Kennedy's assassination was the first story event. I think that was the first time in history where, you know, millions and millions of people who weren't anywhere near some traumatic event of this kind, like, say, Pearl Harbor for comparison, you know, began to tell stories as if this had happened to them. The media saturation had reached the point where people felt as if they were there because, in a way, virtually, representationally, they were.
In fact, they were more there than they were if they'd been standing in the grassy knoll.
In a way, I think that's very true, because you get a kind of God's eye view of the whole situation. Plus, it repeats itself over and over again, so you get to dwell on it. If you were just standing in the crowd, you'd hear a shriek, you'd hear a gunshot, and you'd catch a glimpse of this or that, and then it would all be over.
So going back to the Kennedy assassination, where all of us who were alive had our me moments off screen, Now Virginia Tech, everyone was having their me moment on screen.
Exactly. Don't forget, last year was the year that Time magazine named you Person of the Year. And they thought they were talking about it blogging and YouTube. That was much more profound an insight into the nature of the mediated world and the central performative role that everybody feels entitled to play in it than Time magazine ever dreamt.
In this day and age, is it actually possible to resist the event story? We saw the Amish try when there was a shooting in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. We saw Native Americans try when there was a shooting at the Red Lake Indian Reservation in Minnesota.
Yes, it is possible. And the fact that I've never heard of the Red Lake incident tells you what the consequences of that are. The price you pay for that is that you don't exist. And people have a deep-seated need to exist in the public square. Otherwise, you have no significance. You don't make any difference, to use that word. So, yes, you can resist, but if you do, you're counting yourself out of the world in which the rest of us live. And, you know, bully for you. But that's what it is.
We were tracking the media and the impact of the media after 9/11, where the phenomenon became global.
That's right.
There was no corner of the world, practically, where a human being couldn't say, I remember where I was on 9/11.
Right. You're absolutely right, Brooke. And again, this is early innings. This stuff is just starting. And we really have to think in terms of the meaning of some of these images and the effects they can have on people. I think that when they got that what amounts to the press kit that Cho sent to NBC. That's what it was. It was a press kit. I really think there should have been a discussion about which one of those pictures to show at all. The aesthetic of his self-presentation is extremely powerful, extremely potent. And we really have to recognize that this isn't a world of representation separate from a world of reality. This is a fused world of representation and the real that we're all living in. And that means we need to have a whole new set of concepts and a whole new set of ways of making judgments about what to do and not to do in that world. It's a different world, literally.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thomas DeZengotita is the author of Mediated, How the Media Shapes Your World and the Way You Live in It.